Welcome back, listeners. When we last left Miss Carol and Crystal, they were in their separate homes, both retreating into the depths of their individual thoughts about the conversation they had just ended. Both, in deep isolation, considered the what's, the where's, and the how their next decisions would affect them going forward. There in her kitchen stood Miss Carol, with her hands on top of her head, sincerely wanting to help this young woman as best she could, while also experiencing an equally strong urge to ignore Crystal's desperate request and simply not get involved in a situation that would surely invite unwanted pain back into her life. Meanwhile, here's Crystal, a young woman facing the reported inevitability of her end of days, desperately seeking any form of relief she could find, anything to relieve her of the tormenting fear and constant agony of pondering her impending death. Naturally, we might also begin to compassionately formulate in our own minds the most positive outcome we could conceive for this most undesirable situation. However, neither Miss Carol's nor Crystal's situation is unique. In fact, an estimated 38 million Americans are presented with similar inescapable dilemmas every day and become family caregivers in the midst of a significant other's crisis. Such facts drive home the message that trauma is universally present in millions of public and private settings throughout the country, throughout the world, on a daily basis. Among them, thrown into the roles of caregivers are our ministers, healthcare workers, professional counselors, and people of every walk of life, all of which come into the sharp realization of the monetary and time responsibilities that immediately face them as they grapple with the compiling tasks associated with delivering compassionate care to someone else. Others find themselves unable to pay the absorbent cost demands of facility and in-home health care, therefore forced to become round-the-clock caregivers of parents with terminal illnesses, children who have been horrifically victimized by automobile accidents, and acquaintances who have no one else to offer compassionate care in their times of need. Such predicaments can commonly be found among adult children of aging parents, significantly impacted by life-altering diseases. Whomever it happens to be, whatever the circumstances, regardless of relational history with those needing assistance, the need is pervasive, as are the costs associated with being exposed to the intimate suffering of another. According to CBS News, the work of family caregiving, performed by the millions of Americans mentioned earlier, is valued at an estimated $600 billion annually. However, there can be no cost estimate that can accurately represent the price each of them pays in mental anguish, pains of extreme loss, loneliness derived from social isolation, and the harsh impact of secondary traumatic stress. Yes, we can continue to explore the external factors surrounding the circumstances of Miss Carol and Crystal and all of the people that we know. Unfortunately, we would be scarcely scratching the surface if we failed to get below surface-level factors that are apparent to everyone. We will need to venture into the intimate depths of self. You know, that place where you are, where you and only you reside and are welcome to be there. That place where you have and you will vehemently declare to any uninvited body that approaches, "This is me, myself, and my business, not yours." So just wait before you show me the door. No one wants to walk around in your sacred garden. I'm only asking you to allow yourself to revisit that place as we proceed. After all, right there is where you lay the foundations on which your perspectives will rest and are formulated. It is there in your secret place where you might hold your most intimate confidences, your most closely held beliefs, and your most unpublicized anxieties. On those foundations, perspectives can quickly become tainted by fears, anxieties, and false beliefs that can suppress all your energies and become the highest summits to conquer before you can ever make sound decisions for yourself or anyone else. Or, if those foundations are undergirded by godly truths, they can deliver you to an encouragement to face all circumstances from a position of power, much like David when he hastened toward the giant Goliath, shouting, "This is the day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and cut off your head." 1 Samuel 17 and 46. Now, let's take a look into some of the most likely foundational factors that shaped Miss Carroll's initial perspective when approached by Crystal. Remember, the goal here is not to arrive at a solution to the circumstance of which we speak, but to awaken ourselves to the fact that you, yes, you, possess the keys to shaping your perspective, one that can deplete you or one that promises to empower you. Given the perspectives of outside observers, we know that she is immediately engulfed in several layers of fear. Most often, these come from the form of what if or why scenarios. Instantly, she could have been swarmed with, "What if this girl dies while I'm in her presence? What would I do then? What if I don't know what to say to her? What if I tell her how afraid I am to do anything? Would she still respect me? Or what if I don't do it at all? What would she say about me? What if I just want to relieve the pain of my husband's death and crawl back into myself? And then, of course, why me? Why did she choose me?" All these self-generated scenarios are potential robbers of one's power and one's energy. If you can recall, Crystal was already lying face down on the floor, regretting ever mentioning her dilemma to Miss Cairo. Power depleted, she was, asking herself, "Why did I even say anything to her?" You see, our bird's eye view of these examples can only be speculative at best, and much more clearly recognized from the outside looking into someone else's matters. However, chaplains are not given such a distant viewpoint. They are led by a divine calling to ministry, to work inside police and fire departments, hospitals, hospice facilities, and numerous other placements where they are required to encounter multiple of these missions to care for others on a daily basis. These are frequently the traumatized environments of domestic violence, the aftermaths of violent automobile accidents that have caused horrific injuries, or the aftermath of violent domestic assaults. These compassionate messengers of hope are ultimately exposed at a higher degree to compassion fatigue, secondary traumatic stress, and vicarious trauma, as they are daily called to deliver care to victims and survivors of a wide variety of tragedies. Nevertheless, they are also given the opportunity to formulate their perspectives from a position of power and balance. Though they are called and placed as God's compassionate carriers of hope, they are also tasked with handling the cost of caring for those in need that sometimes require them to extend beyond the established standard of duty as their ministries extend into their communities, the churches that they might also pastor, and familial obligations. Chaplains also need reminding of how their viewpoints might be affected by their mental well-being, which can be adversely impacted by a continual denial of the need for self-help and lack of social interaction. Equally important is their physical healthiness, most certainly impacted by a sedentary lifestyle, unhealthy eating habits, and an inability to sleep and recognize when rest is most needed. The cost of wearing the robe of caregiver is prohibitive if done so in your own power, because one's own power is finite in every sense of the term. It runs out quickly and takes much longer to recharge than it was to be exhausted. Fortunately for us who have answered the call to ministry care, the one who sent us also extends to us the exclusive invitation to infinite empowerment. He beckons, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Matthew 11, 28 through 30. Although the invitation is clearly understood by those who have read it, we so often ignore it. We go on, we get so busy that we forget that we are charged to be God's shepherds. And we try to shepherd that flock alone. As we move forward in these episodes, please keep in mind, we are never alone. We have an advocate. We have a good shepherd that shows us the way. We do not have to do it by ourselves and shoulder all that pressure on our finite shoulders. As always, if there was any thoughts or feeling stirred from this episode that you would like to share, or if there is any idea you would like to have discussed on future episodes, don't hesitate to send me a suggestion at the following email address: kstokes60@appliedbalance.net. Your identity is always optional. We'll do our best to include it in an appropriate upcoming episode. So until next episode, please continue to develop your understanding of on what foundation your perspective sits. What are the founding thoughts, beliefs, and opinions that formulate it? Whatever they are, please allow them to lead you to a pathway that leads to applied balance.